We live in a time where certain conversations can seem tense or even taboo. So to push back against this culture of silence, I sit down every other week with a different guest to talk about what they believe, what shaped that belief, and why it matters. My name is Tony Vicenda, and this is The Threshold. Welcome back, everybody. This week on The Threshold, I am joined again in studio by Father Colin Parrish. Father Parrish, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm just chilling. I'm happy to be back on for my cyclic appearances.
So you just finished your first year of ministry as a priest in the Roman Catholic tradition. Do you have any nuggets of life wisdom that you want people to listen to?
The first year sucks. Of anything.
Of anything?
It's always hard. It's a big transition. But I'm super, super blessed to be able to... Well, that sounds weird. I guess it's just more the fact that like I have been given something really beautiful. And I'm really happy to see what God does in this next year. And just a lot of just peace of not being in my first year right now. I'm really happy.
I want to ask you a question that I just came up with, and I'm actually really excited to ask. How would you compare your first year in the Navy to your first year as a priest?
The first year in the Navy was way easier.
Why?
Because the thing is that with the Navy or even with, and I feel like this, and depending on your job, and a lot of jobs. The first year may be difficult in trying to get used to how to do the things and do the things right. But at the end of the day, it doesn't require the entirety of your heart, your flesh, and your mind to be synced up and in order to live in it well. I think that from what I can tell from my other friends is that the first year of being a parent is something comparable.
Yeah.
Because all of yourself has to be synced up.
No, I think that makes a whole lot of sense. I'm going to talk about what we do when we get together here on the threshold. And that is, I had a guest that I got a chance to talk to at a
I've
friend.
Been super stoked to for this.
Yeah. Father Parrish like basically dibs to this episode almost a year ago. Like,
sorry, Mari V. So sorry.
He did this episode almost a year ago. I got to sit down with a good friend of ours from the internet, hopefully in person eventually, Shannon Ochoa. Father, tell me what you know about Shannon before listening to the episode.
Yeah. I also want to say, like, maybe at a certain point for, like, kind of an extra part of the episode or something, maybe I'd really love to hear what Mari V has to say about this.
Maybe on Patreon. We'll see.
Yeah. But, anyway, her and her co-founder, which I thought was funny that she didn't name anyway. She's like, am I co-founder?
Right, which is also interesting because if you're a fan of The Threshold, her co-founder is Anna Carter, who we did an episode with in season one.
Yeah. But anyway, what I know about them is that they have founded this thing called Eden Invitation, which is for... those who are Catholic, who experience same-sex desires and who maybe have or maybe are queer in some way and or maybe, you know, have some gender fluidity questions, etc. Like, how is it that I can love? Right. What does it mean for me to love? Mm-hmm. And because and also to maybe clear up questions around like what the church really believes about sexuality and about givenness of the body, et cetera. That's part of it, but also really like now that I know like kind of what the boundaries are, I'm glad I know what boundaries are, but that doesn't also tell me how to live in a human way within those boundaries. What does it mean to love? So it's not enough for me. For example, an analogy I use is it's not enough for me to know that I should not cheat on my wife, right? I don't have a wife, but anyway.
That we know of.
But it's not enough for me to know that, like, because that's only, you know, 99 point, or that's only like 0.1% of the life of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I need to know, like, what does it mean to actually concretely love? And what does that look like? Those are like really, those are questions that I don't think the church as a whole asks a lot right now.
Well, I think one of the things, and Shannon and I didn't really get into it, the church doesn't, the modern American church.
That's what I'm talking about.
Doesn't talk about sex.
Period.
Period, except for from a moralistic standpoint.
Thanks, Puritans.
Yeah, which is not our theology or our tradition, no. But it is our behavior, right?
Yeah.
In the same way that one might talk about gender ideology or gender, I'm sorry, gender identity versus gender expression, right? We have a certain type of identity around sexuality, but our expression of that is very, very, very incongruent with that.
And so, like, what does it mean for, you know, to take seriously things like Spiritual Friendship by Abbot Elred, right? Or what is, you know, there's a website called Spiritual Friendship, I think, and I'm trying to remember the actual website of that.
We'll drop it in the show notes.
Yeah, that's really good. And I've had a couple of buddies of mine reference as being really helpful for them.
I
think the church has always talked about, right, what does it mean to love and what does it mean to be in relationship? And I think that she, over the 2000 year course of her history, including the fact that she communicates the presence of Jesus himself.
She meaning the church, not Shannon.
Yeah. We have everything we need.
Right.
And it's just that, you know, like there's in the church in America, there's a deep, like we said, fear around this and misunderstanding and then like latent Puritanism from our founding, which, you know, replaced. So even as Catholics, we deal with it, even mm-hmm. though that we're not Puritans.
Well, some of us are. I mean, that's the thing. Some Catholics are Puritans. And so Shannon and just occupies this really unique space in American society today, where she has a couple of cultures that intersect, that inform who she is. And she has a way of experiencing that, a way of journeying through that, that I was so excited to sit down with her and explore. And you know, we don't get super deep into that specific question, but there's tons of information about that on her website, Eden Invitation. She mentions that in the show. We'll drop in links in the show notes also, certainly. But it was just a thrill to sit down with her, talk about her life, her childhood, her experiences, and hear a little bit more about her incarnation of her faith. So I hope that you guys out there listening enjoy
stoked
my conversation with Shannon Ochoa. If you want to go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Shannon Ochoa, and I hail from the great state of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, originally a Chicago suburb. If I told people Chicago, they wouldn't take that well. And a few fun little facts about me is that I am a wearer of beanies, not to be mistaken with Beanie Babies. I'm a lover of old school tobacco pipes and a chaser of waterfalls. Despite TLC's warning against it and despite the overuse of that particular joke.
Right. So when you go chasing waterfalls, where do you like to go chasing them at?
So it's pretty crappy up here in the Midwest with the amount of waterfalls, pretty limited. And so I have a life goal of hitting a waterfall in every state. So I can't say that I have a particular favorite spot. Growing up, there was a great place a few hours from where I lived called Starved Rock and Matteson State Park. And that's where I would go for Illinois waterfalls, which are few and far between.
Why waterfalls? What's so interesting to you about them?
Yeah, I think water is an incredibly beautiful element. And I think the most particularly beautiful piece of waterfalls is there's a few different parts, right? Like before the water falls over, it's just very calm and serene, and it's very concentrated. And just by the rocks sitting there and cascading off, it creates just like a great chaos. And I think that that's just like so beautiful and just in so many ways, like a metaphor for how life can be, you know, just in it can be calm one second and you can, totally hit a few rocks on the way, but at the same time, just like the great beauty and the force, that comes about as the water falls over the edge. And just it's incredible to stand under one, you know, to like feel that water, rushing over you. So that's my goal, is to stand under a waterfall in every state.
I want to ask you a couple questions to help our listeners mm-hmm. get to know you yes. a little bit better beyond just your waterfall preferences and proclivities. The first one I'd love to ask you is, if you have a couple of hours in your hometown, mm-hmm. where do you love to just waste a few hours?
Yeah. Okay. So if I had a few hours in my hometown, where would I waste a few hours? So my hometown of Bartlett is, there's not really much to do there. It's a pretty classic suburban town with all of your little shopping centers. But honestly, what I love to do when I'm home is to just like spend time with my family. Most of my family still lives there. And so, nieces and nephews, I get to see them all and run around. But also to, I grew up playing soccer. And so when I'm home, I like to just like get out and go back to the soccer fields, and just play when I'm out there. Or even to grew up with like a golf course behind my house. Clearly I loved sports. and so I'll just get out there and play a few rounds once it's a little bit darker and no one's playing. I would like sneak on and play a few holes. That was like my little rebellious side when I was a younger kid, was to just hop out on the golf course. But yeah, it's a pretty small town. There's not much to do. Not many people live there anymore, that I know, except my family. So that's honestly what I do most of the time, is just spend time with them.
You mentioned that high pursuit of goal that's mm-hmm. drives you in sports. So does that translate over to your life? Do you have a goal that you feel like ultimately you would love to achieve at some point in your life that drives a lot of what you do?
Oh gosh. Yeah. Do I have an ultimate goal that drives what I do? This is going to sound super cheesy and basic and very Christian, but pursuing heaven, you know, that longing of, just like being united with the one that I love, and just doing all that I can to be with him, to be united with God in the end. It sounds very like simple, but honestly, I think that that's what informs everything that I do. You know, it informs how I carry myself in the day-to-day life, the choices that I make. How I choose to spend my time. And maybe it doesn't like filter into how I spend my time, like when I'm watching Netflix, you know, as much. It's not like I'm like, okay, is this unifying me specifically with Christ right at this moment as I'm going to like brush my hair, you know, not necessarily, but, I mean that very much informs everything that I do, or at least the most part, except for brushing my hair, apparently.
Yeah. I think that's great. And I would love to just, let's go ahead and pivot to the main question we ask here on the threshold, since you already shared a little bit, about what you believe as far as faith goes. But if somebody just walked up to you on the mean streets of Milwaukee, and said, hey, in a couple minutes, could you tell me what you believe about life and faith? How would you respond to that person?
Yeah. I think, honestly, the biggest thing that I would first start off with, it's like, you have no idea where they're coming from, but, just in sharing my own experience, I think I would just note like that I have encountered a love, that has changed my life. I have encountered a love and a goodness that has transformed everything that I do. And that's in a God who has a plan that's infinitely bigger and bolder than anything I could have ever imagined, who has in store for me a plan beyond anything I could wish or dream, and has taken me on, you know, like a more wild adventure than I ever could have planned for myself. And I think too, right, like going, so fun fact, I have a little bit of a background in ministry. I worked in campus ministry for years. And so I think like there's such a goodness to being able to like just share just like the good news, you know, being able to share, you know, that we have a God who created us out of love, and so desires us to be in union with Him. And in our humanity, right, like we have fallen away from that in different ways, right? Fallen away from that beauty, that intimacy, that communion with Him. And so we have a God who loves so deeply and longs for us so intimately to be with Him, that He sent His Son. He sent His Son in Jesus, right? Like incarnate, who gets it, who knows our own hearts, who's, you know, suffered in ways that we can't imagine, but who's also suffered in ways that we know so personally, so intimately ourselves, who knows anxiety, who knows worry, who knows confusion. And He sent His Son to share in that with us. But not only that, to help us move beyond that suffering, into a resurrected life, into a life, you know, to like bring us back in union with Him. So you can tell I have a little bit of a missionary background. But I think for me, that's just been a really big part, is just like knowing the intimacy of a God who just longs for me to be with Him. And honestly, that's just really shaped my life and my understanding, how I move. And too, knowing that, right? Like knowing how intimately He longs and loves us, longs for and loves us. I think just like knowing too how intricately He created me. Like I was saying too, right? Like He has a plan that's like so infinitely bigger than anything I can imagine. That means He has me in mind. Right? That means He has me in mind. He had me in mind in His creation. And so I've always kind of been like a biology nerd. and my degree was not in it whatsoever. I originally started like athletic training. But I love biology. And so I've always been so fascinated by the concept of like how intricately He made our cells. Right? Like we have like ribosomes and endoplasmic reticulum, like all of these like weird phrases. And that's just in a tiny cell. And the fact that like trillions of those exist in our bodies. And yet we have unique personalities, like unique characteristics physically, mentally, just blows my mind. And so, yeah, like, I know that's a very detailed answer, like what you would share with someone, but I think just like painting that picture of like, oh my gosh, like we have a God who creates so intricately, so intentionally, that He somehow pieced together like your chromosomes, your genetic makeup, your, you know, your personality, the experiences in your life, that He's so intimate that He doesn't overlook you, that He knows you and He shaped you so intricately. So that's my little biology nerd.
I love that. And so much of what you were talking about, there is this sense of real intimacy with God, you know, this God that you believe in. Mm-hmm. And so for somebody maybe who walked up to you in the street who had never experienced that, right? Not just this understanding of who Jesus was, but who maybe feels like, okay, maybe I believe in a God, but I don't believe that God has anything to do with me. Has anybody ever kind of asked you why you get to experience that and other people don't?
I can't say that I've ever been like asked that directly. I've definitely been asked like, how do you encounter that intimacy? I think that's been a really big thing, especially like working in ministry for a while. It's just like a question on a lot of people's hearts, right? Like we live in a day and age where intimacy is often lacking, right? Like we can go wherever we want to encounter people online, to, you know, like swipe through, hide behind a text, right? And we're longing for intimacy. We're longing to be known, to be seen, but it's safe. and so I think, how come other people have that, or how come you have that and I don't? It's not necessarily a question I get asked, but I think like one of the biggest ways that I would encourage someone in that is to just be like, oh my gosh, like be bold, you know, like in seeking that intimacy, like be bold, be raw, especially, yeah, like before God. Like the only way I've been able to get where I am is by not hiding, you know, hiding behind, sure, a phone, hiding behind that stuff, but also just like not hiding hiding before God, not keeping things from Him, and just being real and honest, right? Because in any relationship, it's not just a one-way street, which is a super classic thing to say. It's not just a one-way street, but we also too have to like be vulnerable, have to reveal ourselves to the other. And so I guess that would be my best response, you know, in that regard of, yeah, how come you have this intimacy and I don't? Is like, well, you need to go there, you know, like you need to go there too. You need to be intimate. You need to be open as well.
How does somebody start to be intimate or open, do you think? So like, I think you hit on a lot of things. I know these are big questions, right? But I think that I really loved, and that is, you know, we have this society that can seem more connected, or like we have more knowledge of the details of people's lives than we've ever had at any point in history. Yes.
Right? We think we know people. Right.
But not necessarily do we experience intimacy or openness or vulnerability. So, mm-hmm. you know, what are either ways that you would encourage other people to do that? Or how do you do that yourself? How, like, you know, if you said you've had to go out and be bold, what are some ways that you mm-hmm. engage in kind of that openness or boldness on a regular basis?
Yeah. I think in a few different ways. I think we can experience like vulnerability and openness, boldness, like with ourselves, with others, and with God, right? I think we need to be bold with ourselves. And what I mean by that really is, right? Like if we're still going with these like cultural pieces, right? Of you know, we're very connected, or we can build a certain sense of ourselves online. I think being like bold with ourselves really just takes like a real honesty and just like self-assessment, just in an assessment of our lives and looking at like, okay, like what's going on? How is that moving my heart? You know, at least in my own life, a way that I've really had to do this is, for example, growing up, I've just really had experiences of struggling with anxiety, and depression. And I think with myself, I just had to be really, really honest of like, okay, like what's making me anxious? Like, why am I experiencing this anxiety? And so like not being afraid to like actually wrestle with our experiences, right? Like not just shoving it aside, shoving it in a drawer and being like, okay, I'm done. But I think just like being honest and in wrestling with those experiences, wrestling with those questions, I think in like being honest with others, we really, it just takes honestly like a trust and being bold, right? Because again, like there's a reason we try and make our lives look so incredible on Instagram. You know, there's a reason we're posting like this cool food that I've tried, or like this beautiful sunset that I'm witnessing, because we want people to see a certain sense of ourselves. And so, right, like you need this rawness with yourself, and actually, which I'll get into it, like this rawness with God, before we're sharing with others, because if you don't have a sense of who you are, like, what are you sharing with someone, you know? And so to be able to confidently then, you know, even if it's painful, even if it's difficult, even if you're revealing something that's just, very, very close to your heart, whether that's like a personal struggle, yeah, like you need to like name that to someone, and obviously, right, like with prudence. But I, like in my own life,
just go down the street screaming at everybody. This is all my stuff,
yeah,
right?
Like, yeah, you're not going to be like, yeah. So I struggle with this. Like, here you go. Here's my laundry list. No, right? But like with people that you know and trust, and it's so easy because you can spew something out online and be like, hey guys, here I am. But like, that's not boldness. Like that's not real authenticity is thrown out of Facebook status. But real authenticity and boldness is going to be found like in your friendships and the people who are walking with you day to day, who are going to call you on and encourage you and who you're going to be a witness to most specifically. And so, you know, for me, that's just been being really honest with my closest friends. You know, like if there's a certain temptation that I've had, to be able to ask for accountability, you know, to be able to ask for accountability in that and being unafraid to share that with my best friend, and her being unafraid then too, to like call me out on that, you know, to like call me out and to encourage me, you know, whether that's like a temptation to gossip or people like, if you have a temptation to, you know, just like any form of like sexual sin or whatever you want to say, you know, like, whatever your heart is longing for, and you like need to name that to someone, yeah, like being unafraid to go there with someone, you know, being unafraid to ask them about it and to being unafraid to share that.
Yeah. I love, so right now, like I'm jamming on this quote, as part of what we're doing at my job,
okay.
By Henry Nouwen. And it's about the proper order of relationship. And we experience our relationship first, in solitude with ourselves. And he's Catholic and I'm Catholic. And so like, you know, it's in solitude with ourselves before God, right?
Yeah.
What you were saying earlier was very much like this, the path outward, this path to connection really is to go inward, to know yourself, to sit in front of your honest and true self. Mm-hmm. And then kind of, then we need to expand out to like the close group of friends and who can help. And then from there, we actually enter into relationship with people beyond that and all around us. And that we're usually seeking the opposite of that. And this is a decades old quote. Yeah. It was before the social media and internet reality, but that we usually start on this periphery. We want to connect with everyone or everything, and then bring that back to the closest people. And then like, hey, if none of that works, then I'll look at my own life and I'll pray to God and, you know, just kind of toss up the hopeless prayer of like, I don't know how to do this at the very end and kind of, I mean, like what you're sharing is really like a lot of what I've been thinking about over the course of the last month and a half, around that, as we've been getting ready to kind of break that open in my community. We weren't clear earlier. So if somebody asked you, what religion you are, how would you respond to that?
Yeah. So I would be pretty point blank. I'm Catholic. Yeah. So I grew up, I was raised in the church, but pretty loosely, and made the choice more intentionally to follow as I got older. But yes, I would say Catholic.
What does it mean to be loosely raised in the church? That's a really
Yeah, I know. I tend to use that a lot. So, I mean, I guess what that means is, you know, I received my sacraments. We would go to mass sometimes on Sundays. It wasn't always like a weekly thing. And I grew up in a house where both of my parents, incredibly beautiful people, both, even like politically were like kind of different. And so too, even just like the way that they practiced the faith, the Catholic faith was different. And so I just kind of, you know, I didn't know exactly what the Catholic Church taught. I didn't know exactly, what it looked like. And so I guess that's what I mean by that is I just like didn't have a full sense of what the church was, what it meant for my life, what it taught, and like how to be Catholic, you know, like what it actually meant to be Catholic. And so, yeah, I guess that's what I meant by to be loosely raised as Catholic.
So you mentioned you've been in ministry. Obviously, you have a very passionate faith now. Very comfortable speaking to and about, you know, how do you get from being raised loosely Catholic to where you're at right now? Do you remember a point at which something was awakened inside of you that made you desire that more or start to explore that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know personally, I've always had like this very innocent childlike faith in a lot of ways. And while I was on those random occasions in the pews, I would be reading a children's Bible and I would just like be poring over it, you know, just poring over it and mesmerized by the stories. And maybe because they were action packed, I don't know. but I was enamored. I was enamored by this children's Bible. So that was just kind of like a foundation for me. And as I would continue into high school, I would find myself, my best friend, her mom was a youth minister. And so I was like, okay, cool. If I want to hang out with my best friend, I'm going to go to this youth ministry thing. And it was even there where I started to hunger more. I learned more about the faith. I went on mission trips, and I always kind of say that like service trips are kind of like the gateway drug of the faith because it's like such a nice like access point, you know? And so I just started to learn more, but in so many ways, my faith, even going into college, like it wasn't fully integrated into everything that I did. I went away to a state school and, you know, that love to kind of explore and understand yourself and wanting to have fun. I just kind of got into a little bit of like a crazy double life. I've just like, you know, like drinking, smoking, the whole classic college partying scene. But I found myself in mass every single Sunday. You know, I found myself in mass every single Sunday. Like praise be to God for an awesome youth minister for planting that seed that I like should be there. But I found myself there. And even if I was like, you know, hungover at 9 PM at night at this mass, like I was still there. And so I just kept living that for a while. And I was really struck. There was a missionary who reached out to me, and clearly this has a big influence in my life if I worked in campus ministry for a bit. I was so struck. This missionary reached out to me and we grabbed coffee, and she shared with me that she had an intimate relationship with Jesus. And I was like, what? Like, that is so weird. Like, what is this chick saying? And I asked her about that, and we dove into scripture. We dove into the word. And amidst my double life, amidst all of the questions that I had, I was seeking to really understand and know myself at that time. In college, there were a lot of different influencing factors. And I just remember wrestling. I remember wrestling, you know, questions of who I am and did God love me? And so I just remember a very, very profound moment, just wrestling and going before the Blessed Sacrament. And so in the church, right, we believe in the tradition of just as Jesus says at the Last Supper, right? Like, this is my body, this is my blood, do this in memory of me. We believe in a mystical way that the body and blood is actually made manifest on the altar, and we can consume it, right? Or we can adore it, right? Adoration. So this Blessed Sacrament was in my campus ministry, you know, and amidst the drinking, the smoking, the questions, the, you know, like throwing myself around, I just like randomly felt a call in my heart like one day to like go into the chapel, and there happened to be adoration going on. And I was just like longing for that intimate relationship that she talked about. And for the first time in my life, I was real. I was honest with God. I was honest with my wrestlings. I was honest with my questions. And I felt just such a great sense of being home. I felt a great sense of him just very clearly speaking, that I was his. Very clearly noting that like, I didn't have to run anymore. I didn't have to, you know, be trying to like stuff my brain with all this intellectual formation, right? Like, we know that's good for us, but I was only trying to like live by reason alone, and intellect alone. And very clearly I'm passionate, and long for that relationship. And that was the moment where everything changed for me. Everything changed for me. And I knew that I was going to spend my life pursuing him. That whole like double lifestyle, right? Like we know that the faith is a journey, right? And there are moments that are still difficult after had like crazy profound moments in adoration. But I just, that moment, I knew, that he saw me. I knew that he knew me, and, he wanted me to be with him, and I wanted to be with him. I wanted to spend my life pursuing him. You know, amidst all of my questions, amidst all of my wrestling, I was known. And that for me was everything.
So what is that? So you had this moment of clarity and certainty, mm-hmm. This moment of encounter, and transcendence. Mm-hmm. So, and that led you to this understanding that you wanted to pursue Christ. Mm-hmm. What does that pursuit look like?
Yeah. So honestly, like after that point, it was so funny. I like, this is like not what I would encourage to do, but like after that moment, I like threw myself into this like Marian consecration. And so like what that looked like was, it, you know what, maybe that totally works for someone. But for me, it was just like this really intense movement, and the Lord totally knew what I needed at the time. But you know, like this, you know, this devotion of like praying the rosary every single day and like really offering myself, you know, to like the Blessed Virgin Mary. And it was just like this really intense thing that I did right off the bat. And I think I just like didn't know what to do. So I ran to it. But I think what really transformed, what that got me in the habit in, right? Like praying this daily devotion, this daily consecration was got me in the habit of like building relationship and building prayer into my life. And so what pursuing God has really looked like, really started with like a daily meeting with him, like a daily conversation. Because, you know, if I was seeking intimacy, and I wasn't going there, how can you be known? Mm. And so, yeah, I really just kept going every single day, just sharing where I was at, what my heart was longing for, sharing when, you know, like when I was like pissed at God, being honest with him about that, you know? And so I think for me that's really what pursuing him started to look like more, was just being honest, was being, again, kind of going back to that vulnerability you were talking about before. And you're right, Henry Nouwen in his book, Can You Drink This Cup, just like rocks that, right? Like this idea of vulnerability before God and just receiving that, sharing your life with him and receiving your life before him was just really big for me. And so showing up daily, getting to know him in scripture was really, really big for me. Reading the gospels. You know, I think it's funny whenever we like get gung ho, right? Like you have this profound experience of the faith and you're like, I'm going to read the Bible or something like that. And then you like start with Genesis, which is so beautiful, but then like you're burnt out by Numbers, you know, like you're burnt out and you're like, I don't know why I need to know all of the ages of all these different people.
The law is so exciting in the Old Testament.
Yeah. And like, you know, like I said, I spent a lot of time really reasoning through the faith intellectually, which is really big for me, but we fall in love with a person, mm-hmm. right? Like we fall in love with a person, again, very clearly seen in my own encounter with Christ. But yeah, like we can't, only seek him in an intellectual pursuit. But we also have to encounter him in a relationship. It's, what is it? John Henry Cardinal Newman, who says, his motto was cor ad cor liquitur. Mm-hmm. So heart speaks to heart. And so, you know, like when we go to pray, it's not like you're going to hear like this profound booming voice, you know? But it's just, it's an intimate sharing. It's an intimate sharing of your heart. You know, like a heart speaks to heart in a way that words cannot express. And so, yeah, like going to prayer, realizing that I wasn't always going to get, you know, like all of these specific answers to every question I asked and every problem I laid before him. But just like that, again, that affirmation of just his presence, you know, like of his heart, like being intimately close to his heart, I think is what really drew me on. And so, yeah, I guess it's a long answer to respond to, you know, like how did I begin to pursue him? But honestly, just that sharing of hearts yeah. with him, you know, that consistent just openness with him was really, really big.
Yeah. Well, you hit two or three of my follow-up questions. So I would love to hear people hear a little bit about maybe what you do now, where all these things have led, mm-hmm. where this relationship has drawn you. So so what do you do? Like you know, like what in the world, what is your role?
Yes. My role. Well, first and foremost is to love people, I guess. But I think like one of the ways in which I've really felt called to do that, like I said, is in ministry, is in being able to, you know, like know God, love him, and to share that with other people. And how that kind of manifests right now is I'm actually starting a nonprofit called Eden Invitation. And honestly, like that flows out of, again, like the love of God, the love that he placed on my heart, my co-founder's heart, and how we want to live that and bring that to the world. And so I guess kind of to share a little bit about what that is, because it's like, she's naming this organization. What is it? What does it do? So particularly relevant, right? Like I talked about how I wrestled with a lot of questions growing up. And one of those for me was really based on my sexuality, was my experience of attraction and desire. You know, as I was going through this cycle, going through my youth group, I found myself, you know, like when I was crushing on some of the guys, I found myself falling more intensely and more often for the women. And I was really confused. I didn't know what to do about it. And so, you know, even though we had a lot of chastity talks growing up, it still wasn't talked about a ton, you know, like that experience of same-sex desires wasn't really talked about a ton. And so I had a lot of questions, but since it wasn't talked about, I just didn't share it. I didn't share it. And so I carried that with me in a college. And amidst, yeah, like the fun of seeking and going out and doing all that jazz, I still, part of me just wanted to hide too, like to hide behind some of that stuff. When I found myself falling in love with a girl on my dorm floor and I didn't know how to communicate that or who to communicate that to. And I didn't want to be found out. And so I saw it with a lot of questions. And since it wasn't being talked about a ton in the church at the time, I actually picked up at my state school a gender and women's studies minor because I knew that's where it was being talked about. I knew I could talk about, you know, that experience of that same-sex desire and that it was a place where people were unafraid to talk about it. And I, like, still didn't share there. Like, I never shared with anyone in those classes because I was like, they're going to think I'm weird. I am Catholic and I'm attracted to women. And I didn't know what to do, right? And so I wrestled with those questions a lot. And I think, like I said, and I would even ask too, like that mentor who was like, you know, you can have an intimate relationship with Jesus. I would ask her, like, what does it mean to be a woman in the church? What does the church teach about same-sex attraction? And I, like, still didn't tell her at the time because I was so afraid. Mm-hmm. And so I guess, you know, kind of to paint it, you know, I'll give a little bit of the context of, I guess, like the church's teaching on this and why that was something, you know, like I had desired to live the church's teaching, but since it wasn't talked about a ton, I didn't know what that meant in desiring to pursue it, but also still experiencing those attractions. So I guess something to paint is, so church's sexual ethic really kind of dives into what I was talking about earlier, right? Like how we have this like beautiful, intricate makeup, right? Mm-hmm. And that means that there is like a beauty to how we were created. There's a beauty to the intricacy of our design. As Catholics, as Christians, we do believe in like a body soul unity, right? That we are embodied. And so our bodies mean something for our lives and how we live and move in the world. And so, right, like in this vision of creation, there's this understanding that man and woman both are different manifestations of the image and likeness of God. And that together, in union with one another, it images God in a unique way. Like they image him in a particular way, in a way that would give life. And so when it comes to then, right, like this experience of same-sex desires, this understanding that relationships between a man and man or a woman and woman is not entering into that manifestation of imaging God, right? Like in that life-giving sense. And so it's, right, like going back to that embodiment, that intricate design of who we are, that means that being male or female, like, matters. Mm. And so, right, we talk about this male and female, that we are complementary to each other. And it's so funny, whenever I think of, like, complementary, I always think of colors, like when I was, like, in elementary school. And when you think of complementary, when it comes to colors, it means really that when they're placed side by side, they intensify one another. And so this beauty and this understanding, and this isn't to say, like, in no way can we like draw each other on and challenge each other like in brotherhoods and sisterhoods. But there's like a uniqueness and a beauty to the man and woman complementarity that like intensify and call one another on in a very unique way. And so by imaging God in that way, you're entering into that fullness of your identity as male, as female, And so it just like allows us, right, to live in that fullness of the image of God. And the reality is that we, like all of us, right? Like all of us are called to live in this full context of beauty, right? Like the beauty of creation. We're all called to that union with our Creator, that union, that fulfillment of our desire with Him. And we all fall in it short in different ways, whatever that looks like. We all, you know, like our desires point in different ways that don't point to the fulfillment of all desire. And so, you know, like all of us are living, seeking to pursue that. And so I guess like kind of going back, a little bit of a long response, but, that, you know, for me, I growing up, that was always a big part of it, was that receiving that understanding, and knowing too, it's not always easy. And so the day to day is, like I said, in my original, like, what is my biggest goal that points my life is, you know, like amidst the wrestlings is pursuing that like union with Him. And so after all that to say, right? Really long response about my own testimony and the church's teaching. Eden Invitation really, really exists amidst the confusion on what the church teaches, both in the culture and within the church, to offer like clarity, but also to be able to like get the message out there, sharing the fullness of the church's teaching. Cause I think sometimes there can be confusion of like, okay, am I a bad person for experiencing this? Or like, you know, like that distinguishing of like, or distinction, sorry, of inclination versus action. Like, what does it mean? A lot of people don't know how to talk about it or don't know, you know, like for me, like I said, if it wasn't talked about, I didn't know that I was like, all right as a person, you know, just for experiencing these desires. And so like, we need to be unafraid to go there and to have those conversations. So with Eden Invitation, we really just like want to offer a space of community and conversation, through resources, book clubs, and just like other experiential events, you know, for same-sex desiring, Christians or LGBT Christians who are really just seeking to lead a life of discipleship. And so that's what I do now.
And what is the response been to that? Like, I mean, the, you know, what you talked about is there's this culture of silence in a number of ways about a number of things built up.
Yeah. Right.
And so, you know, I think lots of times in that situation where we know there's this culture of silence, you have to toss something out there and kind of wait to see how people respond to that. What has the response been like?
Yeah, I think, at least so far, we've been like really well received. And maybe we're about a year old, which is awesome. We just celebrated our year of existence as an organization, not as beings. We just celebrated our year, as an organization. And so we're still growing. So it's not like we're like on this huge, like news span of these cultural debates, but I think breaking the culture of silence, what that's really done, what we've noticed, you know, both my co-founder, and I share our testimonies like online. We offer a space, like I said, for book clubs, and what we've just heard, I mean, we've encountered so many stories, so many people who've grown up in the church, and who've experienced, you know, like these same-sex desires and thought that they were alone their whole life, you know, who listened to a chastity talk. And because, you know, it was only talked about like, hey, protect your daughters, protect, this is someone's daughter. Like, don't look at them in that way. You know, like that person who, you know, turned to like same-sex pornography because they thought that that was totally like kosher and they were just trying to like figure it out. And nobody was there to answer those questions. We've just seen so many people just like open up, and to share in freedom. Hey, like, thank you. Like I know, that there is a possibility for joy. I know that there is a possibility, to encounter Christ, like amidst pursuing Him and amidst still experiencing these desires. And I think too, like, honestly, even among friends, like I've seen in talking about this more and sharing my own story more, I had been sharing for a while, but even doing it on this platform, people are just more comfortable. People are more comfortable talking about it. They're unafraid to ask questions as to like how things manifest, you know, like whether that's attractions or how do I respond to someone who comes out to me? Because the reality is in this day and age, like we need to be talking about these things. We can't be afraid to talk about it because, you know, like people are going to be like left behind. People are going to be left feeling isolated if we're not willing to go there, you know, like if we're not willing to engage these questions. And so I think honestly, that's really what we've seen in breaking this, breaking the silence is really just normalizing the conversation, allowing people to feel freedom and comfort, whether it's their experience or not, to share, to ask questions, to engage. And that's just been a huge, 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 huge gift.
Awesome.
To receive. Yeah.
No, it's so great. And I love that. And I mean, I've been so excited. I've been following you guys since I first found out about you, and I just love the work that you guys do. And I'm always both myself and Father Parrish. I know he wants to have you guys come up sometime. He works as a chaplain in a Catholic school. And he loves the work that you guys are doing. I know that Anna and your talks that I've been able to see have been phenomenal. And I just love reading the articles that I see come across. And I think the organic way and the natural way in which you guys are pursuing forming these relationships keeps you free to focus on your mission without pushing an agenda, which I think is so often the challenge in the church.
Exactly.
People are not really pursuing, okay, where is God leading us in this so much as, all right, I feel like this is what I'm supposed to do. And so I'm going to go make this happen. And there takes such a patience that I don't have a lot.
Well, praise God, first and foremost. But I think too, oftentimes we focus on the issue first and not the person. Mm-hmm. And the reality is like, and I mean, part of it is because it's my own experience, you know, it's my own experience of attraction to women that like I know what it's like. And so to be able to like not address something with the issue first and be getting into intense debates about labels or different aspects of that, it's like, no. Okay. Like I see you, I know you. Like, mm-hmm. I understand you on being able to encounter people and not the issue first, and to make that invitation there as a person to the most beautiful, intimate, loving person of Christ, right? And just being able to offer that rather than like, here, let's debate, let's talk about you, but not to you, you know? Right. And so to offer a platform and a space for people, you know, people, not an issue.
Right.
And I just think that's huge. Right.
Well, I have enjoyed talking to you so much, and I probably could talk to you for another hour about more things, but I do want to be conscious of your time. Before I close out any of my conversations with a guest, I want to offer two things. One is I get so much out of these conversations. If you have a question for me, I'd be happy to answer one, but if you don't, I am not that interesting.
Okay, this is going to be kind of random, but I love how much you love to tell stories and like the diversity of the human experience. And so I'm not going to ask about a personal story, like of someone that you've encountered, but like what is a story or a book that, and no cop-out Christian answers, like what is a story or a book that has just like transformed your life and just like the way that you live and why?
Yeah.
If you have an answer off the top of your head.
No, I probably could give you a lot because I do have a lot of books that influence my life. I would say the first book that I feel like really changed the way I thought about everything was Frank Herbert's Dune series. I mean, the original one, and I read through the first five of the initial six and then forced myself after many times to read number six. Not because it wasn't good. It just was all different characters. It seemed very disconnected and loved it. Isaac Asimov's Foundation series, which has some very similar themes in it, was another one. I was a science fiction nerd. But I also think from a young age, even the concept of mythology was very attractive to me. Like I used to just read Greek and Roman myths from other cultures, Native American, And I was very consumed with the concept of religiosity and belief in general, which probably explains a lot about me now. but Dune was the first time I ever experienced that in a narrative context for something that was completely fantastic. And so I think that was the first one. Modernly, a book that kind of addresses some of the same themes, but in a much more tongue-in-cheek manner, and specifically for Christians, I think, is an essential read. It's a book called Lamb by Christopher Moore. Is the gospel according to Jesus's childhood friend Biff. And it is 100% a tongue-in-cheek, funny thing. And if you don't have a sense of humor, skip it. Like, I mean, you handle that kind of stuff, but it is an excellent read to just kind of makes you reevaluate some things that are 100% non-true, but kind of engages in some of those same things. Yeah. I actually really loved that you asked that question. I was really kind of curious about some of the way that story may have played into a lot of your background. Like you mentioned reading scripture as a child and, you know, that kind of captivating you. There are a couple other moments where I was kind of curious about some of the same things that I really love that was your question. The other thing that I like to do is offer people that if you'd like to receive prayer, I'd be happy to pray with you or for you, but you're under no obligation to do so.
No, that sounds great. Go for it.
In the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Holy Spirit, I ask you to come down on Shannon and just bless her more abundantly. As she seeks you, as she pursues you, as she longs after you, as she enters more deeply into the desire that you have placed into her heart for love and for companionship and for all the good things that you offer her, I just ask you to give her solace and comfort in that space. I love just the way that she exudes a sense of calm, not just a sense of placidity, but a sense of comfort, home, and support that comes through so clearly. I ask you to cultivate these gifts deeply inside of her, that she might be a source of just healing calm, of succor, of love for those around her. And that through that, she might transform not necessarily cultures, but just individual relationships and people who are in need of healing, who are in need of care. Let's call these things through Christ our Lord. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. That's beautiful.
If people want to find you or Eden Invitation online, where do they go? How do they do that?
Yes. So the best way to find us is through online, our website. We've got a lot going on there. And it's with all things trendy, minimalism. It's www.edeninvitation.com. That's Eden, like the Garden of Eden, invitation, like, cool, you're invited to a party. Edeninvitation.com. And we're also on Instagram and I almost said Twitter. We are on Instagram and Facebook with the handle of Eden Invitation as well. If you want to email us, you can email us through our website. We have a lot of different ways for you to be engaged. And yeah, check us out.
Awesome. I'll be right back right after this to continue my conversation with Father Colin Parrish. Hey, everybody. I wanted to take just a minute to thank all of you guys for listening. A lot of times people will ask us, how can they support the show? The number one way that you can support the show is actually just by sharing it with someone else who you think would enjoy this type of conversation, whether that's by sharing a post we put up on Facebook, retweeting us on Twitter, sharing it on whatever social platform that you are a part of. The best link to share is just thresholdpodcast.fm because it links out to any of people's favorite podcatchers, all of our social media, and everything else. So if you're able to do that, it really helps because we don't have a budget for marketing or advertising. You can help share these great conversations that we have with our guests on the show. Other ways to do it, you can also go to catholicbalm.co and buy anything there. You can actually use the promo code KNOCKKNOCK to get 10% off your order, and that's a great way to support the show. But the best way to directly support us financially to help offset the cost of the show to keep on growing what we're doing here is to become a patron on Patreon. Patreon is a way to support artists that you appreciate directly, and we have a couple new Patreon patrons this month. The first is my good buddy, Eric Martin, who actually, I think, bought himself or subscribed or became a patron. I always say it the wrong way. I'm sure there's a best way to say it. Who started becoming a patron on his birthday. Happy birthday, Eric, even though it's a couple weeks late. I think I told you in a message directly also, too. But if I didn't, happy birthday and kiss your wife and your daughters for me. Tell them all I said hi. Also, I want to say a special thank you to Chuck Holcomb and Jennifer, his wife, for becoming patrons of the show. Jennifer's name was on the account, and when I messaged her to say thank you, she really wanted me to know that Chuck is a huge fan of the show and to make sure that he got the primary shout out. But I love you both. I'm going to give you both a shout out. Chuck is really active in our Facebook discussion group, and you can find a link to that down in the show notes. So many great ways you can support the show, but again, just sharing it, liking it on Facebook or on another social media platform, or rating and reviewing us on iTunes are just great free ways to show your support for the show and help get the word out about what we're doing. One correction from last week, our affiliate with Guadalupe Roasteries, our connection with them is not fully done yet. I missed an email on that, and so this week we're still going to be working on that. I'll let you guys know when it goes up, but if you tried to buy coffee through that link last week, it did not work, and we will have it up soon, though. Let me know if you guys have any questions about that by dropping us a message. If you have any messages for us, just go to thresholdpodcast.fm. We love getting your emails. We love reading them. We can't respond to every one of them, but we do really read through everyone, and we really enjoy getting that information from you guys about what we can do to make the show better, what you like, what you don't like, your crazy ideas about starting bands with Father Colin Parrish, all those things. So here we go, back in my conversation with Father Colin Parrish about the conversation I just had with Shannon Ochoa. Man, such a good conversation. Father Parrish, what are some of the things that jumped out to you from the conversation I had with Shannon?
You know, like the thing that I've that actually I was just really kind of tickled by. Tony just tried to tickle me. She's been claimed by Christ, and she's really like that's the organizing principle of her heart, is that relationship of being loved. And something I know about her from listening to a previous podcast from somebody else, right? It was provoked by this, you know, this falling in love with a woman or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, that was like, I think it was beautiful for the fact that she did not, she didn't consider that simply just an objection, right? She considered that a question, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a big difference between those two stances of heart.
Ooh, say more about that. Because I think even whether it was here or somewhere else, you heard it. And there's a short video of Shannon's story. Maybe we'll clip the audio in here for what Father Parrish is talking about, where she talks about that. But it's also on our Facebook page. If you go there, and I'll link to it in the show notes, where she talks a little bit about this experience. But say what you mean more about an objection versus a question.
Well, I mean, she had the experience of being, of being claimed by Christ, of recognizing the relationship as definitive for her, right? Like she made a very clear judgment about that, right? She was able to put down like her college party life, right, and say, there's something more for me. And then Christ answered that question, right, in this prayer and these relationships. And she said, yes, this is what my heart has been yearning for. And then, you know, down the line, another provocation came up in the face of this love, right? And I perceive that for a lot of people, for different reasons, this could be seen as an objection to Christ, right? For many reasons, they could see that as an objection, saying like, okay, well, but I I have feelings for, I have desires for this person that is somehow that's against Jesus.
Right.
Right. And so instead of going down a path of questioning of the heart of like, Lord, like, what is this about? Right. Shannon said, Lord, like, this is a question of my heart. Mm. Right. And I know that you created me. Right. She has this sense of being given, of being created.
Mm.
Right. Yeah. I know you created me and you created me for beauty and goodness. So I'm going to ask the question.
Yeah.
It's not an objection.
Well, and I think that's so interesting because there's a real humanity in that, not just for her, but if Jesus is who he said he is, right? Mm-hmm. And if he is what the church teaches, that he is a person, there's a real humanness to that in the sense of kind of what you were talking about earlier. Like if I am, and this happens, like people can say this, like if you're in love with somebody and all of a sudden you encounter somebody else, right? That you find attraction to, you experience love towards. So often I think people look at that as an objection one way or another. It means, oh, I must not really love this first person, or I must not really love this second person. They don't actually dive into to the reality of like, I as a human being may experience different types of love. I may experience different ways of loving. And that doesn't invalidate any of the other ones, right? Mm-hmm. Like that doesn't invalidate that. And it also doesn't mean that what I'm necessarily experiencing right now, that I fully understand. And so if we just throw up objections, we don't explore those things. We don't explore those realities. And this is not like a license to go off and like cheat on somebody or to not love the person you're with all of a sudden, but to ask the question, why? Like, mm-hmm. why am I experiencing this? Is this something that I'm supposed to experience? Is this something that I'm supposed to explore in a different way? I think we oftentimes shut down around those things rather than engaging in them. And so I would say even if you're not somebody who believes in Jesus, there's a real reality there of saying like, how do we explore how the love we experience for one person, in this case, Jesus for her, interacts with the love and the feelings that we have for another person?
Yeah.
And how do those relationships inform each other? And what is that trying, what are we trying to experience through that? I think that's awesome.
The other thing that really struck me about, you know, her life is, and part of this is also a question, just because it's a question for me, right? But after having this kind of intensive conversion towards this intensifying relationship with Christ that she had when she was in college, I think she said in there, you know, like, was it like retreats are the gateway drug for Jesus, mm-hmm. or something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I thought was fun.
Got to get that retreat high, even that retreat contact high, and then you just, ooh. Saturday night, the speaker, it was on fire. There was music. I was crying, and emotions must be an experience of that. Mm-hmm. I'm hooked. I'm addicted. Give me more. Yeah.
So, you know, like, what is it like for her? You know, like the beauty that she's able to, go back into her family and be in relationship in a beautiful, full way.
Mm.
Even though that, like, I don't know this, actually. I just kind of perceived it from, I assumed it from how she was talking about it, but that maybe that's not where her family is. I make the word assumption pretty clear there.
Yeah.
But, because for me, like that, you know, that's a struggle for me. It's like, well, you know, I have a tendency to, to go back to my family and not be myself.
Mm.
And so that one, like that's actually kind of moving to me. That she's able just to have a unity of self.
Yeah.
Is basically what I'm saying.
Yeah.
This unity of self and where she's going. And so, and also she's not distracted. She's very focused. And I've been starting to call like, one of the biggest sins in my life is distraction. Right. I think in a lot of people's lives, it's just simple distraction for what really matters.
Are you reading The Noonday Devil right now?
Oh no, but I mean, Sadia is like one of my big ones.
Right. And so, I think that's amazing. So I know that you usually have really good, like kind of questions or, places you kind of want to probe in a conversation, with people. What are some things you might want to have asked Shannon that we didn't get a chance to go into, or that you would kind of want to put in front of her?
As she said, I'd want to press on this one place, you know, like she said that she loved that term.
Right.
Anyway, but, No, actually, the question, one of the questions that I had is that, you know, in relation to your, you know, to your studies at university, how is it that, like, how, what was your process of being able to understand what was being said in your classes in relation to, basically the theology of the church? I'm really curious about that.
So in her women's studies classes, how mm-hmm. people, how that interacted with her.
Yeah. Because when you're talking about, you know, the theories of Simone de Beauvoir or Judith Butler, these are things that I hope our audience would somehow check out and understand.
I'll put links in the show notes.
About, you know, performative gender identity, versus, you know, gender essentialism, versus a whole bunch of other things. Anyway, you know, like there's just a lot of investigation and inquiry that one has to do, right, in order to be able to see those for what they are, to be sympathetic to them on one hand, but also to be critical. And that's actually something that I was kind of curious about. It's like, what is it? Where are your sympathies and your criticisms in those areas? Mm. Right. Because where's the sympathy with the intent and with the sympathy with, you know, the initial intention for where this is coming from, but also, what are your critiques? And like, why are they that way? Because I think that, you know, Shannon inhabits a very particular space within the world, especially as far as like, feminism is concerned. Like she's in this very privileged place. And that's what I'm also very attracted to, because she's in her own way, a leader for me.
It's really interesting. And I hope that Shannon would agree with you. I think she probably would. That statement, she's in her own very privileged place, because I think a lot of people, when they think about the intersection between what it means to be Catholic or Christian and what it means to have a same-sex experience, be LGBT, however people want to talk about that, I think most people feel like that's not a privileged place, like that's a challenging place.
Oh, yeah. So that's the other thing is that this is something that's not a question. So her experience of life, as it's communicated through what I heard, is that she does not on a regular level, right, or on a daily level, I'm not perceiving that she experiences her place as a burden. Mm-mm. She's not experiencing her life as a burden.
No,
she's experiencing it as an adventure.
100%.
And like, that's amazing. And like, I want that.
Right.
I want that for myself. Even though my experience is different from hers, I can hear my own heart in her experience.
Right.
And that's why I think it's a privileged place, even though, and I understand why people would consider it a burden. Like, I'm not trying to minimize that experience, but nonetheless, like, here's an individual who I can look towards and say, like, it's possible for me to be on an adventure with circumstances that are very different.
Mm, yeah. No, I love that. And so I'm really excited. I'm really hoping we can get, I mean, my biggest question for is, when can Shannon and Anna come up to the state of
Washington? Oh, yeah, I really want to get beers with you two. Well, you all are great.
I want us to pack a cooler full of beers and go find a waterfall somewhere and stand underneath.
That's my
big goal.
I was thinking when she was talking about that, I was thinking of Snoqualmie Falls. I'm like, she can't stand under that. She'll die.
I looked at pictures of Snoqualmie Falls because I was just like, that's the one I know of. You can get at the bottom of that. You can get like the spray.
Yeah.
Like you can get some of the downpour, but it would kill you.
Yeah, I know. There are plenty of waterfalls. There are so many waterfalls out here that are like more accessible towards being under them and not dying. So
right. And when you come up, Shannon, we will go stand underneath a number of them. I love our dog right now.
Yeah. No, the other thing is that one of the questions that I really wanted to actually, maybe it's a challenge. Can I?
Yeah.
I can offer challenges, especially because she's a fellow Catholic,
right?
Is you know, just you know, I really hope that in the, you know, like as Shannon, as you're growing, as you're deepening, as we all are, right, and walking down this road, that with the support and the buy-in and the accompaniment that you experience of both Jesus and the people that He gives you, that you will come and into the place of really owning the authoritativeness that you have been given.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the things I really hear in your voice is Jesus has given you a prophetic voice and a prophetic experience. And not just by baptism, but also mysteriously by circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, you have something to say and it is really beautiful. And I really hope that your authoritativeness will not be undermined by the evil one, the temptation of the evil one.
Mm. Yeah, that's a pretty good challenge.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's been such a pleasure to have you back, Father Colin Parrish. Shannon, thank you so much for sharing your life, your faith, your belief with us. For all you guys out there listening, if you want to check out Shannon Moore, check out the EdenInvitation.com. We'll link to that down in the show notes. And if you want to talk about this episode, please join us on Facebook. You can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/thethresholdpodcast, and it links out to our discussion group where we post these episodes. We have people who get in, who talk about them. I also want to thank our new Patreon supporters. Again, Chuck, thank you so much for stepping in. Eric, you also, I talked about you guys was in the mid-break, but I really appreciate that. If you want to get early access to episodes, bonus art, things sent to you in the mail, or just support the conversations we're having here, please check out our Patreon. You can go to thresholdpodcast.fm and click on the support button for that, or just click the link down in the show notes. Father Parrish, where can people find you on the internet now that you're not on Facebook?
And, you know, you can find me on two different places primarily. You can find me on Twitter. My handle's at Father, just FR, Parrish with two R's. You can also search the words Dumb Vicar if you want. That's my unofficial title there. And also on Instagram and as Cataphatica, which is Cataphatica.
Exactly like it sounds.
Yeah, Cataphatica.
you can also find us at ThreshPod on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, No, I don't have my real name on there, but anyway.
And so whatever platform you're on, we're starting something new here on The Threshold, and we're asking our guests to close out each of our episodes with a question or two for you, our listeners, to talk about. So I'm really excited to have Shannon be the first person who shares her questions with us. But until next time, use those questions to get out there to FNF ability and to talk about what really matters. Thanks, guys. We'll see you next week.
Hey, this is Shannon Ochoa from Eden Invitation, which is an evangelistic outreach to millennial Christians, culturally defined as LGBT. And what we do is we offer Christ-centered community and resources on sexuality and Christian living. Today, we've talked a bit about just my great wonder at creation and just the beauty that entails, and just understanding a little bit more about ourselves and how we've come to know who we are. So I guess a few questions I would have, for you would be, I think first and foremost, when we're looking at our lives and we're coming to see the complexities around us, who are you? Who are you and what has shaped you? And how have you come to know yourself? And who has given you this identity? I think oftentimes we can turn to a bunch of different things trying to figure out what that looks like. But there are so many things in our lives that just help us come to understand more fully who we are. So what has shaped you? Another beautiful piece, and just the biggest thing I'd want to leave off on. I was just having conversations about this today and over drinks and talking about where are we heading? I believe it's St. Philip Neri, when he would sit down with people, he would ask them what they're doing next. And what is the next movement of their life? And he would say, and then, and then. And each time they would progress and go further into life and to the point of death, right? And he would ask them, and then. And so something that I just want to leave with is where are we heading, right? And I know that sounds intense, right? Moving towards the sense of death. But what is the end goal? What are you pushing towards and what are you striving towards? So the biggest thing to sit with, to walk away with, as you leave this conversation is where are you heading?